in the commanding presence she seemed to carry. But, Lucia wondered, was it possible the princess was so powerful she was able to manipulate a Jedi Master?
Those who are trained in the ways of the Jedi are taught to live by the rules and tenets of our order. We believe in self-sacrifice, and we believe that the power of the Force must only be used when it serves the greater good. Unfortunately, despite our best efforts, there are those who fall away from our teachings. They give in to weakness. They succumb to ambition and greed. They use the Force to satisfy their own base wants and desires. They reject our philosophy and fall to the dark side.
You're talking about the Sith, Sarah whispered. Lucia thought she heard fear in the princess's voice, but she couldn't tell if it was real or simply part of the game she was playing with their host.
Not the Sith. I am speaking of the Dark Jedi.
What's the difference between a Sith and a Dark Jedi? Lucia asked. The Ithorian stopped pacing and turned to face them, instinctively addressing his audience like a teacher giving a lesson.
The Sith were the sworn enemies of the Jedi and the Republic. They sought to wipe us from existence. They sought to rule the galaxy. They united their strength in the Brotherhood of Darkness, drawing countless followers to their cause with false promises. They amassed an army of individuals foolish and desperate enough to believe their lies, and they plunged the galaxy into a war that threatened to destroy us all.
Lucia remained silent as Oba spoke, though she tensed involuntarily at his description of her and her fellow soldiers.
A dark Jedi, on the other hand, has much smaller ambitions. He or she thinks only of himself. He acts alone. The ultimate goal is not galactic conquest, but personal wealth and importance. Like a common thug or criminal, he revels in cruelty and selfishness. He preys upon the weak and vulnerable, spreading misery and suffering wherever he goes.
And you think such a one might be involved here? Sarah noted. You have someone in particular in mind? Oba bowed his head in shame.
Sethoth. As a Padawan, he lost his master to the Thought Bomb on Rusan. I took him under my wing, and eventually I recommended him to the other members on the Council of First Knowledge. Like Ned, he became one of our agents, scouring the galaxy for dark side artifacts and lore. But the temptation of the dark side proved too strong for Set. He rejected the Jedi teachings to pursue wealth and personal gain at the expense of others. Too late, we learned that he had kept many of the artifacts he uncovered for himself. By the time I realized what he had become, he was gone, vanished into the galactic underbelly of lawless mercenaries, bounty hunters, and slavers.
So you fear that Sethoth, this dark Jedi, may have killed Med Tandar Andone?
If the killer was not an assassin hired by someone Andone, then this seems to me to be the most likely possibility. If Set somehow learned about the artifact cache Andone, he would have sought to claim it, and he would have killed anyone who got in his way.
He sounds like a dangerous man, Sarah noted.
Now that the Sith are extinct, Sethoth may be the most dangerous individual in the galaxy.
Sarah stared at him. She thought of the black armored man who had haunted her dreams for the past 20 years, and remembered the words of her father.
The Jedi and the Sith will always be at war. They are each wholly uncompromising. Their rigid philosophies make no room for mutual existence. But what they fail to realize is that they are merely two sides of the same coin, light and dark. You cannot have one without the other.
How can you be so sure the Sith are gone? She demanded. Weren't there rumors that some of the Sith Lords survived the thought bomb that destroyed the Brotherhood of Darkness?
That is true. One did survive. But now he too has fallen, though his defeat came at a terrible cost.
I don't understand. The Ithorian sighed an anguished, mournful sound.
Come. I will show you.
With slow, plodding steps, he crossed the room and opened the door leading back out to the hall. The three Jedi who had escorted them there were all sitting cross-legged on the ground, silently meditating. They scrambled to their feet upon seeing the Ithorian emerge.
You may return to your regular duties.
Yes, Master, they replied, bowing in unison. Dismissed, the Jedi headed up the stairs to whatever tasks awaited them in the higher floors of the tower. Moving at a pace so languid it bordered on maddening, Oba led the way back down to the base of the tower and out into the gardens where at long last he stopped. They stood before one of the many monuments raised in the garden. This particular one was a white block of stone, a meter and a half high and nearly twice as wide. The handles of five lightsabers were inlaid on the face of the stone. Beneath each was a small engraved portrait, presumably an image of the lightsaber's owner. Beneath this, in larger letters, was the following: In honor of those who fell beneath the blade of the last Dark Lord of the Sith, may their memories live on to remind us of what is lost. There is no emotion. There is peace. There is no death. There is the Force. Jedi Master Valentine Farfalla, Jedi Master Rasktah Lasu, Jedi Master Warror Domat, Jedi Knight Johan Othone, Jedi Knight Saro Zaj, Khalib of Ambria. When her eyes fell upon the last name of the list, Sarah felt her knees grow weak. Speechless, she could only stare at the monument, her mind unable to make sense of what she was seeing.
What is this? Lucia asked, echoing her mistress's confusion. Why'd you bring us here?
10 years ago, Master Valentine Farfalla learned that a Dark Lord of the Sith had somehow survived the thought bomb on Rusan. Acting on a tip, he quickly assembled the team of Jedi you see honored on this monument to try to apprehend the Dark Lord. They followed him into the Deep Core and confronted him on the world of Tython. None of the Jedi survived.
Did you know them well?
Lucia wondered aloud, still following Sarah's instructions to ask questions at every opportunity.
I knew Master Warlor and Master Valentine back when we were all Padawans. We served together in Lord Hoth's Army of Light during the war against Lord Khan's Brotherhood of Darkness.
For several seconds there was silence. Oba lost in his memories, and Sarah still too stunned to speak. It was Lucia who broke the spell, asking yet another question.
The last name, Khalib of Ambria? I remember hearing it back during the war. He was a healer, wasn't he?
He was. In the battle against the Jedi on Tython, the Dark Lord was grievously injured. He went to Ambria in search of the one man with the knowledge to heal his wounds. But Khalib refused to help him.
In her mind's eye, everything became clear to Sarah. As her father had predicted, the man in black armor had returned. As before, he had come to try to compel Khalib to work his art. As before, Khalib had resisted. This time, however, her father had the upper hand. Having sent her daughter away, there was nothing the Sith could do to compel him to cooperate.
What happened
when the healer refused? She whispered, her eyes still transfixed on her father's name etched into the base of the stone.
Nobody knows for certain. What we do know is that shortly after the Dark Lord arrived, Khalib sent out a message alerting the Jedi Council. He told them the last of the Sith was at his camp on Umbria, injured and virtually helpless. He wanted the Jedi to come capture him.
Why would he do that? Lucia wondered. I seem to remember hearing that Kalib refused to take sides in the war. Didn't have much use for the Jedi or the Sith.
He did not always agree with the philosophies of our order, but he was a good and moral man. The war was long over by this point, but his conscience would not suffer evil to endure without taking action. He knew if he let the Sith leave, sooner or later, more innocents would suffer. Upon receiving the message, the Council sent a team led by Master Thonatu out to Umbria. I was one of the Jedi chosen to accompany him. Unfortunately, by the time we arrived at the camp, Kalib was dead.
How? Sarah asked, her voice low and devoid of all emotion.
The Dark Lord learned about the message. Driven mad by Kalib's betrayal, his injuries, and the corruption of the dark side, he butchered the healer, hewing him limb from limb. By the time we arrived, the Dark Lord had gone completely insane. He was still lurking around the camp, and he rushed out to attack us. One man against an army of Jedi. Master Thonatu was forced to cut him down to protect his own life.
Sarah's father had been right. He had known the black armored man would return. He had sensed the danger, and he had sent his daughter away. He had saved her life at the cost of his own, and in so doing, he had helped destroy the man Sarah feared more than any other. A flood of emotion swept through her. Relief, guilt, sorrow, shame. But drowning them all out was a fierce primal anger. More than anything, she wanted revenge. She wanted to strike out at the monster who had terrorized her as a child, and then years later, killed her father. Yet that was impossible. The Jedi had stolen that from her. What was he like? Lucia asked. The last Sith, I mean.
He was a tragic, pathetic figure. Thin, frail. You could see the madness in him when he charged us. His eyes were as dark and wild as his hair.
No, Sarah thought. That's not right. He had hair. The black armored man's head was shaved.
Yes, hair like an animal's, long, unkempt, matted with blood.
An unthinkable suspicion was worming its way into Sarah's brain. Was he a big man? She demanded, straining to keep the urgency from her voice. Tall, I mean. The Ithorian shook his head.
No, not overly so. Not for a human.
The dark armored man was a giant. At least as tall as you, Master Oba. Oblivious to Sarah's inner turmoil, the Ithorian continued his tale.
The lightsabers of the fallen Jedi were found in Kalib's camp. The Dark Lord had kept them as trophies. Master Thonatu brought them back along with the healer's remains so they could be laid to rest in a place of honor. This monument represents one of the greatest triumphs of the Jedi Order, but also one of its grimmest chapters. The Sith are no more, but only at the cost of many lives that will be sorely missed. This was the price we had to pay to rid the galaxy of the Sith forever.
Sarah's mind was churning, trying to put all the pieces together. She needed time to think, to figure it out. But she couldn't do that here. Not with her father's name staring up at her from the stone. She needed to leave before she said or did something that would expose her secret and reveal her true identity. You have given us a lot to think about, Master Oba, Sarah said stiffly. I will be sure to relay all of this to the king. Master Oba cleared his throat apologetically.
I have every confidence you will do so. But I would still like to send one of my own people to investigate and see if the talismans are still there.
When Sarah hesitated before answering, Lucia came to her rescue. What would be the point of that? I mean, if you're right about Set Hoth being the killer, wouldn't he be long gone by now? He's not going to hang around after he gets his hands on those talismans, right?
You are probably correct,
the Jedi admitted, after considering her words. Then I see no reason for the Jedi to follow up on this matter, Sarah said, collecting herself enough to seize the opportunity Lucia's quick thinking had provided her. Given the delicate political situation on Doane, it would probably be best for all concerned if the investigations were conducted by the local authorities. She could see the Ithorian wasn't pleased with the arrangement, but he had been backed into a corner. Caught in the web of galactic politics, he was now helpless to take action without turning this into an official diplomatic incident, something the Senate would not look kindly on. If we learn any news about Set or the talismans, the princess promised, you have my word that we will inform you right away.
Thank you, Your Highness,
the Ithorian replied with a stiff bow, only now realizing how he had been outmaneuvered. Sarah gave Master Oba a curt nod as a final farewell, then quickly turned to take her leave, anxious to return to the privacy of her shuttle. Lucia immediately fell into step beside her. Neither of them spoke as they crossed the gardens to the waiting airspeeder. The silence continued as the speeder whisked them up and away, turning the buildings and swarming crowds of Coruscant into a blur beneath them. Sarah was still thinking about the black armored man from her nightmares. She knew her dreams were more than just memories or subconscious fears bubbling to the surface. Kalib had been neither Sith nor Jedi, yet he had believed in the natural power of life and the universe and had taught Sarah to listen to the power within her, to draw on it when she needed wisdom, courage, or strength of spirit. Most important, he had taught her to trust her instincts. In the same way Kalib had known that the black armored man would return, Sarah knew he was still alive. She knew he was somehow involved in her father's murder. The Jedi who had come to Ambria had been tricked. She was certain of it. It wouldn't have been hard. They wanted to believe the Sith were extinct. It was always easier to make people accept a lie they had hoped and wished for. A plan began to form in Sarah's mind. For too many years, she had been tormented by the terrifying figure from her childhood. Now, with Kalib's death as the catalyst, she was going to do something about it. She would avenge her father. She was going to find the black armored man, and she was going to kill him. She didn't speak again until she and Lucia were alone on board the private shuttle that would take them back to Doane. Here, she knew they were safe, that whatever was said would stay between the two of them. Even so, she wasn't ready to confess everything. She would keep the secrets of her past, her father, her nightmares, a little longer yet. The assassin you hired, I need you to contact her again, was all she said. I have another job for her. Chapter 6. Set Hoth had been on Doane for 2 days. He was determined not to still be here by the end of the third. In part, he wanted to be gone before any more Jedi showed up to investigate Med's death, or to try and claim the artifacts the Serene had come for in the first place. But beyond that, Set was just sick of being surrounded by miners. They were all beginning to look the same, squat and stout, their common thickness a result of generations spent at hard manual labor. Their skin was brown and weathered, not to mention caked with the dust and grime that hung over everything. They all had the same hair, short and dark, and they all wore the same clothes, drab and ratty. Even their features all looked the same, grim and sullen, despondent and broken by a lifetime of grinding in the quarries. To say he didn't fit in was the epitome of understatement. Set was thin and wiry, with long silver hair flowing down over his shoulders. His skin was creamy white and unblemished by the elements. His handsome features conveyed a mischievous charm and just a touch of arrogance. And unlike the miners, Set dressed with style. He wore a tailor-fitted combat suit, the material a shade somewhere between black and violet. The lightweight outfit gave him full mobility, yet was also durable enough to afford some protection if, as so often happened around Set, events took a violent turn. Atop this, he wore a pale yellow vest. Both the combat suit and vest were sleeveless to leave his arms bare. A fashionable violet band of woven Vita cloth encircled each ripped bicep, and his boots, belt, and fingerless gloves were made from the finest Corellian leather. Typically, he also carried a GSI 24D disruptor pistol, holstered on his right thigh, and a conventional blaster strapped to his left. Here on Doan, however, disruptors were banned, so he'd tucked both weapons, along with his lightsaber, into the various pockets lining the inside of his vest. It was obvious he didn't belong with the rest of the crowd in the cantina, but Set was trying to blend in. It was common knowledge that mercenaries could find high-paying jobs here on Doan. Set figured anyone who saw him would assume he was just one more soldier of fortune, hoping to cash in on the escalating violence between the rebels and the nobility. They'd be wrong, of course. Set was here hoping to cash in, but it had nothing to do with Doan's inevitable civil war. Less than a week ago, his former colleague, Med Tandar, had been on this world, and there was only one reason he would ever come to a pit like this. Master Oba sent you here to find some dark side talisman, didn't he? Only you got more than you bargained for. Always suspected you were soft. Whatever Med had come in search of, he had died before retrieving it. That meant the item was still here, just waiting for someone to claim it. Someone like Set. For the past 2 days, he had traveled the scarred surface of Doan, moving from one cantina, barracks, or worksite to another. At each stop, he asked questions, trying to find someone, anyone, who knew something about the Saurian who'd been killed along with the rebel leaders. More importantly, he needed to find someone who knew what Med had been looking for. To anyone who asked, he explained that he was interested because he was a collector of rare artifacts. But the people here were wary. Some of them suspected he was working for the royal family. It wasn't easy to get the answers he needed. Still, over the years, Set had learned that everyone had their price. Or their breaking point. His investigations had led him here, to this nameless cantina owned by a Rhodian bartender named Quano. One of only a handful of non-humans who chose to try to make a living on Doan. Eager to get away from the blowing dust clouds rolling across the surface, Set pushed open the door and entered the cantina. He immediately began to regret his decision. It was clear that the crowd in this particular establishment comprised the lowest dregs of Doan Mining Society. Most of the people here were bent and twisted. The hard-timers, hunchbacked and half-crippled by a lifetime of digging up ore for the profit of others. Their clothes weren't just shabby, but filthy. And the acrid stench of sweat and unwashed bodies nearly brought tears to his eyes. Exactly the kind of people Set would expect to find in a Rhodian's bar. The furniture was as wretched and broken down as the clientele. Glasses disfigured by chips and cracks, discolored tabletops tottering on 3 rickety legs, rusting stools that looked as if they would crumble if given one good kick. Against the far wall was a long, wide bar, covered by a slapdash coat of peeling paint that did little to hide the rotting wood beneath. The row of bottles perched on the shelf behind the bar were covered in a thick layer of dirt and grime. But Set didn't need to read the labels to guess they were all brands that readily sacrificed quality for price. He noticed 2 heavyset thugs loitering on either side of the door and quickly sized them up. Typical goons. Big, strong, and stupid. He could tell from the awkward way they stood that each had a small pistol jammed down the front of his respective belt. Leaning against the wall behind the bar was the green-skinned proprietor himself, his arms crossed in front of his chest. His insect-like eyes glared at Seth from across the room. His taper-like snout twisted into what the former Jedi could only assume was meant to be a sneer. Ignoring the uninviting greeting, Seth made his way slowly toward the Rodian. Two dozen eyes gave him the once-over as he passed the bar, their collective gaze cold, appraising, and ultimately uncaring as the owners turned their attention back to the brackish sludge swirling around in their mugs.
"Bar for miners only,"
Quano muttered in heavily accented galactic basic once Seth was close enough to rest an elbow on the bar.
"You not drink. Go away."
Seth reached out and casually dropped a pair of 100-credit chips on the counter. The Rodian tried to act nonchalant, but Seth could sense that he was suddenly holding his breath.
"I was hoping we could have a little chat," Seth told him, getting right to the point. "Alone."
In a flash, the chips disappeared and Quano was standing on top of the bar.
"Cantina closed!"
he shouted at the top of his lungs.
"Time to go! Back to work! Everybody out!"
Most of the crowd rose grudgingly from their seats, muttering darkly as they shuffled to the door. One stubborn soul stayed sitting, doing his best to keep his wobbly chair from being knocked over by the other patrons heading for the exit. The bartender clapped his hands together twice, and the bouncers by the door quickly moved in. They grabbed the man, each one seizing an arm, and yanked him from the chair. Too drunk to even struggle, the customer hung like dead weight between the two hulking brutes, his feet dragging limply on the floor as they forcibly ushered him out. Upon reaching the exit, the bouncers rocked their human cargo back and forth several times in a surprising display of coordinated effort, building momentum before hurling him through the doorway and onto the hard ground outside. It would have been a lie for Seth to say he wasn't impressed by the distance they achieved. With the last customer gone, one of the bouncers slammed the door and latched it shut. Then they both turned to face Seth, grinning, as they resumed leaning against the wall on either side of the room's only exit. Seth couldn't help but admire the Rodian's utter and complete lack of subtlety. Most proprietors would have invited Seth into a back room to chat, rather than shutting down their entire establishment for only 200 credits. Judging by the general decor, however, the establishment was barely profitable. Not that Seth really cared. He wasn't trying to keep a low profile. He was used to leaving memorable stories in his wake. If anyone ever came to investigate, he would be long gone. So what did it matter if he had another tale to add to his legend? Over time, the details would inevitably become exaggerated. And one day, people would marvel at how Seth had been so wealthy that he had paid thousands of credits to shut down an entire cantina just so he could speak to the owner.
"Nobody bother us now,"
Quano said from behind him, hopping back down onto the floor.
"You want drink?"
"I'm a collector, interested in rare artifacts,"
Seth replied, ignoring the question and cutting right to the chase. He wanted to spend as little time here as possible.
"Rings, amulets, that kind of thing?"
Quano shrugged.
"Why you tell Quano?"
"Word around the camp is you sometimes have these kinds of items for sale."
The cupped antennae on the bartender's head twitched ever so slightly.
"Maybe,"
he whispered, leaning forward so Seth could hear him.
"Minor find things. Him wants to sell it off-world. Maybe Quano help him."
"Then this is your lucky day,"
Seth replied, somehow managing to flash a dazzling smile despite the pungent aroma of alien pheromones wafting off the Rodian.
"Like I said, I'm a collector. A wealthy collector."
Quano cast a quick glance around the empty room, almost as if he expected someone to be listening in on their conversation. Seth recognized it as a nervous reflex, developed after years of making shady deals in public places.
"What you interested in?"
"I think you know what I'm looking for. The same thing as the last collector who came here. The Saurian."
"Him not collector. Him Jedi. You Jedi too?"
Seth sighed. This was going to drive the price up. "Never did understand the value of keeping a low profile, did you, Med? Do I look like a Jedi?"
The Rodian tilted his head from one side to the other before answering.
"No, Look more like bounty hunter.
Does it really matter? I want to buy what you're selling, and I've got plenty of credits, if you've got the merchandise.
Stuff not here. Quanah just middle being. Minah have it.
Can you take me to whoever has it?
Quanah shook his head.
Minah change his mind. Not for sale no more.
Everyone has a price. I'm a wealthy man. If you take me to him, I'm sure we can come to some agreement.
Another shake of the head.
Last time Quanah take someone to meet miners, everyone end up dead. Too risky.
I'm willing to take that chance.
The Rhodian snorted.
Quanah not care about risk for you. Miners say if Quanah show up again, they kill him.
They don't have to know you were involved, Seth promised. Just show me where to find them. I'll make it worth your while.
To emphasize his point, he produced his small drawstring purse, reached in, and pulled out an entire handful of high-value chips. He held them up for Quanah to look at before letting them spill through his fingers back into the satchel. The Rhodian's tongue poked out and swirled around his snout, his reluctance to take Set to the miners doing battle with his greed.
You pay 2,000. Yes?
700. Or I go find someone else who can help me.
Okay, deal,
the bartender blurted out, unwilling to barter for fear he might let a small fortune slip through his fingers. To seal the deal, he extended his hand. Gritting his teeth, Set returned the gesture. He clasped the other's palm for one quick shake, then pulled back, mildly repulsed by the feel of the Rhodian's scaly skin against his own.
You have drink to celebrate,
Quanah declared.
On the house.
Pass, Set replied.
You got credits with you, right?
The bartender wanted to know.
You pay now, right?
Set nodded. I'll pay you as soon as we go.
We go now. Quanah just grab something first.
As the Rhodian ducked back behind the bar, Set realized there was something off about his voice. Too eager.
So it's going to be like that, is it?
Slipping his hand into his vest, the Dark Jedi whipped out his lightsaber. He ignited it as Quanah popped back up into view, just in time to deflect the bolt from the blaster pistol that was now pointing at him. The Rhodian let out a shriek of surprise and disappeared back behind the cover of the bar. He'd dealt with Quano's type before. Set would have been perfectly content to honor the terms of their agreement, but the Rhodian had obviously come up with a different plan. Why risk your life and take someone to a hidden base for 700 credits when you can murder him in cold blood and take all his money instead? Set respected the sentiment. After all, he lived by similar self-serving principles. But the bartender had made an unforgivable error by trying to use those principles against a Dark Jedi. Keeping one eye on the bar, Set turned to face the two burly miners guarding the door. They had probably been expecting Quanah's betrayal, but they were caught completely off guard by the failure of his plan. Now the grins had fallen from their faces, and they were clumsily scrambling to draw their own weapons.
Why are the big ones always so griffing slow?
Set could have stopped them any number of ways. He could have used the Force to yank their weapons from their grasp, or unleashed a wave that would send the guards flying across the room. Given how long it was taking them, he could have leapt forward and sliced them both in half with his lightsaber before they even fired a shot. Instead, he chose to simply hold his ground, waiting for the inevitable barrage of blaster fire. His adversaries didn't disappoint him. Set easily caught the first round of bolts with a shimmering blade, sending them ricocheting harmlessly away. At this point, a smart opponent would have made a break for the door. Quanah's two thugs, on the other hand, simply kept firing, too dumb to realize the sheer futility of their attacks. Set picked off a few more shots before growing bored with the game, using the Force to anticipate the precise location of the next two incoming bolts. He angled his lightsaber so that they deflected straight back toward their point of origin. The first miner was hit in the chest, the other in the stomach. Both died instantly. Killing his enemies with their own blaster bolts was a long-standing tradition for Set. There were occasions when he needed to keep a low profile, and lightsabers tended to leave very distinctive wound patterns. This wasn't one of those times,
But why pass up a chance to keep his skills sharp? All this time, Quano hadn't reappeared. Set was unsurprised.
Might as well come out. Don't make me come get you.
The Rodian's green head slowly rose up into view. He was still holding his blaster, pointing it at Set, but his hands were trembling so much he couldn't even keep the barrel steady.
Set shook his head. If you're going to kill somebody so you can steal their credits, at least go after an easy target.
You liar!
Quano replied, his voice rising defensively.
You said you know Jedi!
With a flick of his wrist, Set used the force to slap the pistol from Quano's hand. Another gesture lifted the helpless bartender off the ground and yanked him across the room, where he landed in a crumpled ball at Set's feet. Reaching down to seize one of the Rodian's antennae, Set used it to pull his whimpering victim up to his knees. His free hand brought the blade of his still-ignited lightsaber to within a few centimeters of Quano's scaly face.
Let's get one thing clear. I'm not a Jedi.
To emphasize his point, he flicked his blade, caressing it against the Rodian's cheek for a fraction of a second. The sizzle of smoldering flesh was drowned out by Quano's scream.
No kill, no kill!
He blubbered. The damage was minor, a burn that would heal within a week while leaving only a faint scar. But Set was satisfied his point had been made. Shutting off his lightsaber, he released his grip on the antenna and took a step back, giving Quano room to stand. The Rodian stayed on his knees, his hand reached up gingerly to examine his wound.
Now why would I want to kill you? Set asked him. You're the only one who can take me to the miners and their talismans. Until I have them in my hands, I'll do everything I can to keep you alive.
What happened after you get them?
Quano asked, suspicious. Set flashed him his most charming smile.
At that point, we'll just have to play it by ear.
Set could hear the voices of the miners echoing down the tunnel. He estimated they were only a few hundred meters away. From the tone of the echoes, he suspected they were in a large, high-roofed cavern.
They lived like vermin, huddled in underground warrens, afraid for their lives. Pathetic.
Ahead, his unwilling guide suddenly stopped and turned to look back at him. It wasn't easy to read a Rodian's expression, but it was clear what Quano was asking.
I brought you this far, can I go now?
Set simply shook his head and pointed farther down the tunnel. Shoulders sagging, Quano continued to shuffle forward. They were close enough now that Set could actually make out what the miners were saying to one another.
You can't be serious, a deep-voiced man shouted. The nobles murdered Gelba. We have to make them pay.
If they got Gelba, they can get anyone,
another man protested.
I think we should lay low for a while, let things simmer down.
I agree,
a woman chimed in.
I know Gelba was your friend, Drato, but you're talking madness.
Set could see light from the entrance to the cavern spilling around a bend in the tunnel just up ahead. Quano crept around the corner silently and crouched behind a rock that gave him a clear view of their quarry. He might have been a coward, Set noted as he moved up to join him, but he had a natural talent for sneaking and spying. From their vantage point, he could clearly see the cave. It was dotted with dozens of large stalagmites protruding up like ugly brown spires from the floor. Stalactites hung from the ceiling, looking ominously like the teeth of some ancient stone monster waiting to chomp down on the people below. He counted an even dozen miners gathered in a loose semicircle near the center of the chamber. All of them were armed, just like the four guards he had dispatched at the tunnel's entrance not 10 minutes earlier. A few of the miners were sitting on short, flat-topped rock formations. Others paced nervously back and forth. One leaned against a nearby stalagmite. Two men and a woman appeared to be engaged in a heated argument. Four others were standing guard on the edges of the group, blaster rifles drawn while they nervously scanned the cavern's entrance, as if trying to pierce the shadows in anticipation of an attack.
Whoever killed Meta and your friends made you paranoid.
With Galba gone, I call the shots,
a bearded man was saying to one of the women.
And I say Galba's death calls for blood.
Drato,
Quano whispered, speaking so softly, Set had to lean in to hear it.
Him one who dig up stuff you want.
Looking closer, Set noticed an amulet draped around Drado's neck, and he caught the glint of a ring on his finger. The only jewelry he'd seen on any of the miners since he'd set foot on this destitute world.
You want to start a war that will get us all killed? One of the men objected.
At least we'll take a few of the nobles with us,
Drado snapped back. Drado was standing less than 10 meters from where Set was hiding, close enough that he could sense the power emanating from the talismans. The amulet seemed to call out to him. The ring beckoned with its dark heat. What happened to you, Drado? The woman asked. You always used to be the one who said we could get what we want without violence and bloodshed.
I've changed. Now I see the truth.
Drado pounded his chest for emphasis as he spoke, his fist striking the amulet.
The nobles won't respect us until they learn to fear us,
he insisted, turning to look at everyone scattered about the cavern.
We need to make them scared for their very lives. We need to strike terror into their hearts.
Clearly, Drado was under the influence of the talismans. They were corrupting his mind and his thoughts. The power of the dark side had taken hold of him. No wonder Quano said he wouldn't want to sell them. The Dark Jedi considered his options. Bargaining with the miners was out of the question. Drado would never willingly give up his newfound treasures. Given the tension in the room and the itchy trigger fingers on the guards, it was pretty clear that any attempt to negotiate would probably end up in a firefight, no matter what he did. He drew out his twin pistols and took a deep breath, bracing for the confrontation. He needed the target practice anyway. Leaping from his hiding place, he charged into the cavern with guns blazing. He dropped all four of the rifle-carrying guards before anyone had a chance to react. With the force guiding his hand, he easily picked them off with four clean shots as he sprinted toward the cover of a large stalagmite on the far side of the cavern. He skidded in behind it just as the miners began to return fire. They peppered his hiding place, sending up fine clouds of dust as the bolts disintegrated small chips from the stone. Poking his head out, Set fired twice more, reducing the number of opponents to 6 before ducking back behind the safety of the stalagmite. The sound of enemy blaster fire reverberated off the walls of the cavern. Set smiled, enjoying the glorious clamor of battle. Halfway done already. This might be easier than I thought. Behind him, he sensed Quano making a break for freedom back up the tunnel. Set could have taken him out with a single shot in the back, but he decided to let him go. He always preferred to leave someone behind to tell the tale of his exploits anyway. A sharp crack suddenly echoed across the cavern. Glancing up, Set saw one of the large stalactites from the ceiling plunging down to impale him. He rolled out of the way at the last instant, the deadly rock spear exploding into fragments as it hit the unyielding cavern floor. He ducked his head as the shower of jagged stone shards washed over him, scoring the exposed skin of his neck and bare arms with hundreds of superficial stinging cuts. Blaster fire opened up again, but Set was already on his feet. Darting and weaving erratically, he managed to sidestep the shots as he made a mad dash for cover behind another of the prominent rock formations. Momentarily safe, he took a second to catch his breath, glancing up to make sure another potentially deadly stalactite wasn't poised above him. He had no doubt who had fired the shots that had dislodged the last one. He'd gotten sloppy, underestimating Drado and the talismans. It wasn't necessary to be trained in the ways of the Force to benefit from its power. It heightened the senses, made an individual quicker to react and anticipate. What some saw as expertise with a weapon or luck in battle was often really a manifestation of the Force. Even if he wasn't aware of it, Drado was drawing on the power of the dark side, and that made him dangerous. Putting his pistols away, Set unclipped his lightsaber. Playtime's over. Leaning out from behind his rock, igniting his lightsaber, he hurled it with a sidearm throw, sending it spinning horizontally on a wide looping trajectory. It circled the room once, easily slicing through stalactites and miners before returning to Set's waiting grasp. It had taken Set years to fully master the devastating power of the lightsaber throw, but the attack was virtually unstoppable. Five of his remaining opponents had been caught in the lethal arc it traced around the room. Only Drado had been quick enough to duck out of the way, saved by the power of the talismans he wore. But even with these artifacts, he was no match for a former Jedi Knight. Set simply stood up and reached out with his free hand in Drado's direction, his fingers forming into a claw. The miner dropped his blaster, his hands flying up to his throat as he gasped for breath. Set crossed the room, increasing the pressure on his helpless victim's windpipe. Drado collapsed to his knees, his face turning purple. The dark Jedi stood above him, watching coldly as his life was slowly choked away. When the minor struggles finally stopped, Set bent down and stripped him of both the amulet and the ring. He resisted the temptation to put them on right away. From his apprenticeship under Master Oba, he had learned that it was wise to study the artifacts of the dark side carefully before using them. Their power often came with a cost. He had what he came for, and he was eager to get off this civilization-forsaken world and back to the luxury of his home on Nalhata. Besides, the longer he stayed on Doan, the greater the chance he would run into another Jedi sent to investigate Med's death. If he left now, all they'd find would be the sniveling bartender he'd left behind, and he wouldn't be able to tell them anything they couldn't figure out for themselves. So long, Quano. You better hope we never meet again. As he made his way back up the long, winding tunnel toward the surface, the amulet and the ring firmly in his possession, he couldn't help but wonder if the Rodian would ever appreciate just how lucky he was. Chapter 7. In Zanna's opinion, of all the worlds she had been to, including the war-torn fields of Rusan, the lifeless deserts of Ambria, the desolate gray plains of Tython, Doan was by far the least hospitable. The entire surface of the planet had been gashed open in the endless quest for new minerals. Flora and fauna were non-existent. Everywhere she looked, she saw nothing but dirt and rock. It was an ugly, ravaged world. By all rights, it should have been devoid of all life. And yet, the mining camps teemed with desperate beings scratching and clawing to carve out a meager existence for themselves. Watching them, she couldn't help but compare them with her master, whom she knew had grown up on a place like Doan, Apatros, a world rich in nothing but Cortosis mines, owned by Outer Rim Oilworks, a corporation notorious for treating its indentured employees like slaves. But where Bane's brutal childhood and savage upbringing in the mines of Apatros had taught him to fight to survive, had helped forge his indomitable spirit, the miserable curs she'd encountered on Doan were weak, deserving nothing better than servitude. Bane had ambition. Bane had strength. He'd managed to rise above the surroundings. Through sheer force of will, he had cast off the shackles of his childhood and forged a new destiny for himself. He had risen from nothing to become the Dark Lord of the Sith. It was time for Zanna to do the same. She would not allow herself to be like these pathetic wretches, weak, afraid, and enslaved. Through power I gain victory. Through victory my chains are broken. There was still the problem of finding her own apprentice, of course. But for now, she needed to focus on why she was here. Her investigations had revealed that she wasn't the only one interested in the dead Jedi. A man with long silver hair, some called him a mercenary, others a bounty hunter, had been here not 2 days earlier, asking the same question she was. Since then, she'd been following his tracks, talking to the people he spoke to, and charming, bribing, or threatening them into giving her the same information they had given him. She now suspected she knew why Med Tandar had come here in the first place. It was common knowledge among the miners that a small cache of jewelry had been uncovered during a dig, and that the Jedi had come to Doan in the hope of acquiring the find. Zanna could only think of one reason why a Jedi would be interested in a few trinkets discovered in a long-forgotten tomb on an insignificant Outer Rim world. Her master wasn't alone in his obsessive efforts to locate ancient Sith artifacts scattered across the galaxy. At first, she had assumed the man who had been asking about Med before her had been another Jedi, sent to complete the original mission. However, it quickly became clear from the reports of his use of terror and torture to extract information that he was not a Jedi or even someone working for the Jedi Order. The trail of these reports had ended at a dilapidated cantina in one of the seemingly infinite mining camps. But she found the establishment closed, and Quano, the Rodian proprietor, nowhere to be found. With no more eyewitnesses, Xana decided to have a look around herself, hoping for further clues. Night had fallen, casting everything in near blackness. She tried the door and discovered that someone had smashed the lock. Not surprising, given the poverty she'd seen. Pushing her way in, she picked up the faint odor of decaying flesh. She cracked a glow stick from her belt, filling the room with its pale green light. She was just able to make out two bodies on the floor. Crouching by the first one, she made a quick examination. Doan's dry, dusty heat, combined with the general lack of airflow through the cantina, had partially mummified the corpse, slowing the decomposition process. The cause of death was obvious, a blaster bolt to the chest. His own blaster was still clutched in his hand. It was obvious he wasn't Quano. The body was plainly human. And he didn't fit the descriptions she had been given of the man she was following. Based on his clothes and large muscles, he was probably one of the miners. She found the second body the same, a dead miner shot in the chest. Continuing her examination of the scene, she noticed that the shelf behind the bar was empty. But clear circles in the dust showed that until very recently, dozens of bottles had stood there. Whoever had broken in must have stolen all the alcohol and left the two bodies where they lay on the floor. A thorough search of the room turned up no trace of either the Rodian or the silver-haired man. At the sound of someone fumbling at the door, Xana covered her glow stick with her cloak and crouched low to the ground, a perfect statue hidden, she hoped, by the darkness. The door creaked open, and a shadowy figure slowly picked its way through the tables toward the bar in the back. Xana waited to make sure the intruder was alone, then stood up and cast her cloak aside, bathing the room in the light of her glow stick. A Rodian stood frozen, staring at her with wide, fearful eyes. Quano, I presume?
Who are you?
He asked, his barely passable basic made even harder to understand by the panic in his voice. Then he noticed the empty shelf behind the bar, and his face crunched up in sullen anger.
You steal all Quano's booze!
I didn't steal anything. I just came here to ask you some questions, she assured him. The Rodian's shoulders slumped. Sighing, he sat down cross-legged on the ground, his head hanging despondently.
More questions? You Jedi too? Like other one?
He spoke with a tone of utter hopelessness, as if he realized he was doomed and had given up any hope of escaping his fate. A Jedi? You mean Med Tandar? The Saurian?
No, the other one. Human, long, white hair.
I'm looking for him, Xana admitted. But what makes you think he was a Jedi?
Him got lightsaber. Use it to give Quano this.
The Rodian turned his head and pointed to his cheek. Moving slowly so as not to startle the obviously distraught fellow, Xana approached until she was able to make out his scar. In the dim light of the glow stick, she couldn't be sure, but the burn did appear to be consistent with that made by a lightsaber's blade. She knew how to read people. The Rodian was like an abused pup, cowering as he waited for the next blow. Show him a little compassion, however, and he would react as if she had saved his life. He tortured you, you poor thing, she cooed, feigning sympathy even as her mind churned on the identity of the mysterious white-haired man. A Jedi would never harm someone without just cause. Whoever had done this wasn't one of the Order, but he did have a lightsaber, and he was skilled enough to wound Quano without accidentally slicing off half his head. She had heard tales of dark Jedi, Jedi Knights who had fallen away from the teachings of their masters to embrace the power of the dark side. Was it possible the man she sought was one of these? More importantly, did Bane already know this? Her master often kept secrets from her, and she had learned to always assume he knew more than he said. But if he knew there was a dark Jedi on Doan, why had he sent Xana to investigate? Was it some type of final test? Was she supposed to prove herself by finding and killing this potential rival? Or was Bane testing the white-haired man? If he proved strong enough to defeat Xana, would he become her master's new apprentice?
Him wanted information,
Quano whimpered. I'm sorry, Quano, she said, speaking softly as she gently placed a hand on his shoulder. But I need information, too. I need to know what you told him. As she did so, she reached out with a gentle push of the Force, nudging the bartender's will ever so slightly so he would be more inclined to tell her what she wanted.
Him, your friend?
No, Xana assured him, using words to reinforce her subtle mind manipulation. He's not my friend. Maybe Bane was trying to force her hand, she thought, pushing her to act. Was he providing her with a suitable apprentice in the hope it would compel her to challenge him for leadership of the Sith?
You want kill him?
Quano asked, his voice rising excitedly. That is a possibility, she answered, giving him a warm smile. That or make him my apprentice, assuming he doesn't kill me. But I've got to find him first.
Him no here no more. Him go 2 days ago. Leave Doan.
He came here looking for something, didn't he? Quano nodded.
Stuff Mina dig up. Him take it. Kill Minas. That when Quano escape.
And you've been hiding ever since, Xana guessed. So why did you come back to the cantina? The Rodian hesitated, his bug eyes darting nervously between Xana's face and the small, wrist-mounted blaster peeking out from beneath the sleeve of her cloak. I'm not going to hurt you, Quano, she promised. I'm not like him. He enjoys hurting people, she thought. I only hurt people if I see some way to profit from their suffering. I don't think he's coming back. Not if he's got the talismans, she thought. But I need to know something else, Quano. When that man left Doan, where did he go? She saw the Rodian flinch before answering.
Quano not know. For trueness.
I believe you, she said, reaching out to gently pat his hand. But I bet you know people who could help me find out, don't you? The bartender shifted uncomfortably, but another gentle push with the Force overcame his reluctance.
Quano has friend at spaceport. Him maybe find out.
Can we go see him?
You want go now?
Xana smiled again, knowing it would help sustain the rapport she had established. You can grab your credits from the safe first if you want. It was a 2-kilometer walk from Quano's cantina to the nearest ground shuttle station. A 15-minute wait for the shuttle to arrive, and then a 40-minute ride before they reached the spaceport. By the time they arrived, it was well past midnight, and the Doan spaceport, never busy even during peak hours, was empty, except for a few individuals assigned to work the graveyard shift. Unlike the highly regulated ports on Ceutric, the authorities at the Doan docks didn't bother doing any registration checks on incoming vessels. In fact, their only job seemed to be collecting the landing fee. Your friend, Xana asked as she and Quano walked into the unstaffed gate. What does he do here?
Cleaning crew,
the Rodian answered. Xana wasn't quite sure how a janitor was going to be able to help her track down a ship that had left nearly 2 days ago. But she held her tongue as he led her into the arrival departure area, then out to the landing pad at the back. The pad was small, barely large enough to accommodate a dozen mid-sized passenger shuttles. The vast majority of Doan's interstellar traffic was made up of either the personal vessels of the wealthy nobles, who all docked at private landing pads on their estates, or cargo vessels affiliated with the mining operations, which were handled at a different location. Individuals landing here at the communal spaceport were few and far between. The landing pad was poorly lit by a handful of floodlights set on tall lampposts, but even so, Xana could clearly see there were only 3 ships on site, one of which was her own shuttle. Half hidden in the shadows near the edge of the landing pad was a young man slumped backward in a chair. He wore a crumpled custodian's uniform and an ID badge. His arms hung limp at his sides, and he was snoring loudly. Quano walked over and kicked the leg of his chair, startling him out of his sleep.
Pomat, get up!
Looking around with the amused expression of one only half awake, the young man shifted his position and sat up straighter in his chair. When his gaze settled on Xana, his eyebrows arched suggestively.
Hey, Quano, who's your pretty friend?
My name is not important, Xana said, speaking before the Rhodian could reply. I was told you can help me track down a ship that passed through here 2 days ago. When the man looked at Quano, the Rhodian said,
"It's okay. She nice. She friend."
The young man turned back to Xana, crossing his arms and giving a derisive snort.
Yeah, right. A friend who won't tell you her name.
She could sense that his will was stronger than the bartender's, but still malleable. The fact that Pomat obviously found her attractive would help too, if she was willing to flirt with him a little. I'm a friend who has credits, she replied coyly, if you have what I need. The man bobbed his head back and forth a few times, before uncrossing his arms and running his fingers through his shaggy, sleep-ruffled hair. Xana arched one eyebrow playfully and reached out with the force. Come on, Pomat. I'm not looking for the strong, silent type.
Yeah, all right, he relented. Maybe I can help. What do you need?
A few days ago, a man with long white hair arrived on Doan. Did he come through this port? She already knew the answer. Unless the man had some connection to one of the noble families, this was the only port for 1,000 kilometers. But a basic tactic in negotiations was to get the other person to start giving you affirmative answers to simple questions. It made them more likely to agree with you on more important matters later on.
Oh, yeah, I remember him. Nice ride. State-of-the-art shuttle. Custom interior, top of the line. Even nicer than yours.
How would you know what the interior of my shuttle is like? Xana asked suspiciously. There was a brief pause. Then both Quano and Pomat burst out laughing.
Him smuggler,
the Rhodian explained when he caught his breath.
Not exactly, Pomat clarified. It's just a little side racket I've set up. Something to help pay the bills, you know?